Thanks for the opportunity to come and talk to you about some of the stuff we're doing in New Mexico. This is a little more process-oriented than the CASA AFIX that you just heard about, but I think it's valuable nonetheless, and I hope that you'll give me some feedback in terms of what you're doing in your states. I just want to preface this by saying we're sort of in the middle of this process, and when I submitted this abstract several months ago, I'd hoped we'd be farther along. So we don't have the answers yet, but we're getting close. So the title of my talk is A Systems-Based Approach to Immunization. And what I'm going to tell you about today is first just a little bit of background about our coalition, the New Mexico Immunization Coalition, and about immunizations in New Mexico. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about what systems analysis means in the context that we're using, and what we did, where we are, and where we're trying to get to. So just to give you a little bit of background about the NMIC, or New Mexico Immunization Coalition, we've just celebrated our fifth anniversary. And our coalition is about 250 people on our mailing list. About 80 people show up to a meeting. We have a steering committee. We meet monthly. We have two meetings a year. So we do a lot of different things. Our coalition was founded, we got a new governor, who many of you might recognize. He was a former presidential candidate, Bill Richardson. And when he came into office, someone came up to his wife, our first lady, and said, "Do you know that New Mexico is last in the nation for on-time children's immunizations?" And she said, "No, I didn't know that, and that's not acceptable." So she got together with the Department of Health Secretary and with the Vice President for the Health Sciences Center at the university and said, "What can we do about childhood immunizations?" And together they formed the coalition and hired staff, and we started working. Part of the reason why I'm going to mention that is because we started working from the get-go. We sat down, we said, "What are we going to do today? What are we going to do tomorrow? Let's make a quick plan." So we started working in five target areas: advocacy or policy, public education, which is really social marketing, provider education, which for the last couple of years has really focused on the rollout of our new immunization information system, special events, and mini grants to local coalitions. So I say that because now we're here 5 years later, and we wanted to say what we've been doing, it's been great. Our rates have been going up, mostly, and I'll show you that in just a second. But do we know if any of these activities that we've been doing have been making the difference? Or is it a combination of the things together? And do we want to continue to do the same things that we've been doing and go forward? Or do we want to look and say, well, maybe we need to adjust some of the stuff that we're doing? I think somebody said the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. So we don't want to be insane. I want to show this just to give you an idea. Back in 2001, 2002, New Mexico was indeed the last in the nation, and we had about a 61% on-time immunization rate. And as you can see, following the blue line, we've made considerable progress since then. But we're still not exactly where we want to be. Our target is 90% on time, and we're currently at, just at the latest half-year results, we're at 78.4. So we're making progress. In addition, we want to make sure what we're doing is based on evidence, that it's actually making a difference in the areas that we want to make a difference, and that it's targeting those areas of highest impact. We're a poor state and we have few resources, so we want to make sure we're getting the biggest bang for our buck. So now I'm going to tell you a little bit about systems analysis and what we've been doing. First, I want to just define a system. I know most of you know what a system is intuitively, but it's sometimes helpful to give a little bit of thought of, well, what do we really mean by a system? And a system is a group of independent but interrelated elements comprising a unified whole. Now, in the second definition, it goes a little bit farther to say, set of entities, real or abstract, comprising a whole, where each component interacts with or is related to at least one other component, and they all serve a common objective. And that's sort of where we're thinking about a system. Sometimes when you are doing work in any kind of field, you look at what you are doing in your own organization and you think that's the system. But really, there's another organization parallel to you and another one and another one that all comprise the system. And for immunizations, it's not just organizations, it's also parents, it's also insurance companies, it's also pharmaceutical companies. So there's a lot of different entities that comprise our system. So with systems analysis, what you want to do is you want to look, you're going to get all of the people who represent the different parts of the system together and come up with a clear aim and outcome. You want to make sure everybody agrees this is the right way that we're going, and not that one person or one organization says, well, really what we're trying to do is we're trying to make sure adults get their shingles vaccine, and somebody else over here says, well, we're really concerned about Tdap for seventh graders. So you want to make sure everybody's going in the same direction. Then you want to really understand what happens in the immunization system. And the way we look at it is we say, okay, here is the child, and what does the child experience or the child and family experience going through the system to get immunized? And then what we want to do once we've figured that out is to figure out what are the leverage points along that system or that core process where we can improve our functioning, because something is not happening correctly if our rates are not at the rate that we want them to be. So the way we went about this is we actually hired a consultant. And you don't need to hire a consultant, but in our case we did because we didn't really have the expertise within our group. But many of you probably have this expertise and have gone through systems thinking and systems analysis. We first got together and we brainstormed what's our aim going to be. And this was probably the simplest part of the process, because we already had a clear goal for our coalition, we had a priority for the Department of Health, and we had the governor's priority all already pointing towards 90% on time for children by the age of 2 or between 19 and 35 months. And conveniently, NIS gives us those data every year. So we have a marker, we have an outcome that we can point to. And that was really the most simple part. There, not to say there wasn't discussion, but it was probably the most simple part. Then we brainstormed, how do we think a kid experiences the world of immunizations from the time they're born or the time they become eligible for a vaccine through the process of getting an appointment or finding a clinic to getting the shot and then to having the shot actually recorded so that there's some way of knowing when's the next shot due. That we were fortunate that a lot of work has already been done on this. So it was a fairly simple process in coming to that. Then once we'd done that, we sat around and we hypothesized what could possibly go wrong at each of these steps in the core process. And from that, we changed the wording on those to be neutral. So instead of saying, the problem is physicians don't want to give 8 shots in one visit, we changed that to be a neutral statement to say multiple shots given when indicated. And that would be a possible leverage point. Then once we'd figured out all of the possible leverage points, we looked for data to support or refute those different hypotheses. Say, well, is it really true that providers have a problem giving 8 shots at one visit? Or is it really true that providers aren't giving 8 shots at one visit? And I think Dr. Pagman had just shown us that, yes, some providers don't want to give 8 shots at one visit. So this is sort of a graphic for the system, the virtual system for childhood immunizations. And really, this is just showing all of the included entities. We have a shared aim to fully immunize all children, and we have an outcome measure of 90% of children immunized by the time they're age 35 months. This is a draft of our core process, immunization process. And what we boiled this down to is a child becomes eligible for immunizations happens first. That means the child is born, gets their first Hep B, they become age eligible, so for example, 2 months of age, they're eligible for their first set of shots, or they become eligible because enough time has elapsed since their previous set of shots, so they're due for the next ones. Then the next thing that happens is there's some kind of a prompt. Now, this could be an external prompt from a provider, for example, a reminder recall or a reminder card, postcard, but it could also be a prompt from a billboard that they see or an advertisement on the radio, or it could be their aunt or the grandmother calling up and saying, don't forget to immunize my grandchild. So a prompt doesn't necessarily have to come from a medical provider, but oftentimes it does. Once somebody's gotten a prompt, then they have to move to the next phase, which is now I actually have to figure out how to get my child immunized. And that may be as simple as calling up your provider and scheduling an appointment. Not that that's simple, but that might be the simple way that it happens. Could also be that they go to a health fair. Oh, there happens to be the Department of Health immunization van there. Why don't I do it right now? So that's sort of what we mean by arranging to get a shot. Then the next block is the child actually getting the shot. And there's where we come across possible problems like, does the child have a fever when they present? And will the provider give them a shot at that point? Does the child need 8 shots and the provider says, well, we're only going to give 3 today, come back in 6 weeks? That's sort of the different kinds of things that could go awry at that point. And then the recording of the shot, which is incredibly important for keeping track, for getting billing to happen, which makes providers more likely to want to give immunizations if they're going to get paid for them, and also for triggering any kind of reminders for coming back for the next set of shots. Now, after we did this incredibly nice, simple, 5-step process, we came to this, which you can't really see, and I apologize for that. For those of you who came early, I did bring a few copies, and you might have those you can share with your neighbor. If you really, really want to see this, you can email me, and there's the hook. You have to actually do something in order to get this. But what this immunization process map does is it goes backwards and it splits up each of those nice little concrete 5 steps into multiple steps. And some of those are things like, is the child eligible? Is the vaccination order correct? Is the VIS, the vaccine information statement, provided? All of those are really critical pieces of the process. And it's not that we left them out of the simple one, it's just they sort of got squished together. So the idea of going back to this detailed process, and for those of you who have really good eyes, you can see there's little numbers circled on top of several, actually most of the boxes around there. And those correspond to the 17 best practices or immunization standard practices that the ACIP came up with. And when we started to look at this again and we noticed, you know, some of these little squares have a lot of circles with numbers over them. And maybe those points are especially important that we need to take attention to. So that's sort of a nice way of going simple and then going back to complex. Now, the other thing that we're going to do, and we haven't done it yet, is the Vaccines for Children program does CASA AFIX visits, and with that, there's a very long questionnaire that has, I think, 90 questions on it. And some of those questions have to do with these standard immunization practices, best practices. And what we want to do is we want to link those questions to these different steps in the process to say, do we have the data to show what's happening around multiple shot giving, what's happening about giving the VIS form every time, what's happening about giving immunizations to sick kids? Are those the leverage points that we need to look at? So this detailed process map, I'm happy to share, it's still in draft form, it's still going to be changing, but I think it's going to give us a lot of information. Whoops, we're not going. There we go, okay. So now we're in the stage where we have done a very in-depth look at what happens in the process. What we're also doing is we're collecting data to support or refute all of these possible areas. So we're sifting through the Vaccines for Children QI data and other data, including articles written or journal articles from CDC and other places, to say, you know, this is a best practice that's been known to impact positively what happens in this step of the process. We're also looking at gaps in data, because if we're going to say something about providers not wanting to give multiple shots, for example, and I don't think that that's a really big problem in New Mexico, and I don't want to keep coming back to that, but I'm just, that's at the top of my head. Then we really need to have the data to support that that's what's going on. And if we don't have that data, we need to figure out how to collect it. So some of this is a way of helping us to generate more data. The other thing we want to do is we want to do some small interventions, do PDSA cycles where you have a really tight pilot project. You plan, you do, you study, and then you decide, should we expand this to a larger intervention? That way we can maximize our resources and minimize our losses. And I think that's sort of the stage we're in right now, where we're looking for what are the data showing, what are the key leverage points, and what kind of small interventions can we do to see if they're going to make a positive step. So we're going to continue to gather and analyze our data. We're going to continue doing small interventions and checking that those interventions are actually impacting the core processes in the way that we want them to, and learning from the other states. And being here at NIC with all of the wealth of information, I think, is really valuable to all of us in our planning to say, oh, I can bring this back to my group and say, look what they're doing in Oregon or in California or Seattle or wherever. And so at this point, I don't really have the answers to give you, but I'm hoping that in the Q&A session, maybe you'll give us some answers to help us. So thank you very much. That's not working.
Thanks. Thanks, Anna. What questions do you have? And there's a mic over here. If you could walk to it, if you're far away, you could just stand up and speak up. But what questions or comments do you have for either LJ or Anna? One question I'll start. One question I had, LJ. What are the next steps for these clinics to make sure that the things that you have talked about with them continue, that there really is an improvement in their practice?
Now, we wanted to actually close the loop. As we said, we've been doing this for quite a while now, and so what we saw this practice report vehicle as was a handoff from us to the immunization program at the state, and connecting them with the health educator and the resources. I think they came away pretty impressed with what the state immunization programs can bring to practice. A lot of things they didn't know about. They didn't know about all the capabilities of ALERT and about how reminders can happen using that, provided that the immunization program gets a list of the children that are in their practice, so postcards can get sent out. And so my hope is that these people will follow through, that these clinics will follow through with the APHEX evaluation. I don't think that's really going to happen to all of them, because they've got a lot of competing priorities. You always hear that. And these are all busy family practices that are by and large private practices. And so my hope is that some of them will do that. The other thing that we're planning on doing is taking this to our scientific Oregon Academy of Family Physicians Scientific Assembly and presenting the information, trying to disseminate it across to a wider audience.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you describe what you heard between the practices and the public health community?
Thanks, Herb. That's actually one of the things that we wondered about, was what's the relationship between the health department and the practice. And this is where we came to understand that there's a lot of history there. In the 1980s, health departments got together with county medical societies and came up with agreements. The county medical society said, okay, we won't give immunizations if you don't do well child visits. And likewise, the health department says, okay, we won't do well-child visits if you don't do immunizations. That's changing for a variety of reasons. And what we're finding out is what works in one community doesn't necessarily work in another community. And it has to fit the given community. And by and large, I think the relationship is very positive between the health department and the family practices that we're looking at. They work well together, but it's still a dance, and they still get toes stepped on some, and there's some sensitivities about turf that needs to continue to evolve. I have personal bias that I think actually the responsibilities of the health department should be to facilitate the medical home in the primary care practices in these communities, and rather than setting up a separate silo where immunizations are delivered in the health department and immunizations are delivered in practice, I think the local health departments need to be facilitators of what's going on in the practices, and because that's where patients go when they first need some care, and that may look different in one community compared to another.
Thanks. What else? And I had one question for you as well. It's a nice detailed process map that you created, and I was wondering how long that took and how long it will be until you begin to make some changes based on the process that you've undergone, so sort of the timeline for the process.
We started this process back in September, and we had a big meeting in December where we brought together all of our membership to hammer out some of these details. Now, the detailed process map sort of came as an afterthought, and one of our members took this on himself and came to the meeting with pieces of paper taped together like this and, you know, little tiny writing, and said, here. So we actually transcribed it and put it into that nice, very legible process map that you have. It's still undergoing change, so we don't have it completely finished. But I think that the piece where we're looking for data and leverage, that's ongoing. So that's not something that's going to be finished in another month or two. I think that's something that'll continue to evolve.